Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on episode 255 of Wheel Bearings, we got the Chevrolet Bolt EUV, the F-150 Lightning, Mazda's new six-cylinder diesel, parking in San Francisco, Ford trademarks a couple of new names, Tesla opening their superchargers to other EVs in the U.S. this year, and how to look up markups. All that and more coming up next. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. This is episode 255 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abual-Salmon from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakeham from the Fast Women podcast.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from, let's say Engadget.
Okay. What have you been driving this week, Mr. Baldwin?
This week I've been driving a little car. You probably haven't heard of it. It's the Ford F-150 Lightning.
Never heard of
that. What is that?
Yeah, what is car? What are cars, really?
Well, and especially, what is an F-150 Lightning?
What is an F-150? Well, it's part of the F-Series, which is the number one selling vehicle in America for 40 years in a row. 40 years. Number one selling vehicle, 40 years. They don't break out the F-150 versus F-250 versus F blah, blah, blah.
It's about two-thirds F-150 and the rest.
Yeah, we all know it's mostly F-150.
And it's not just, I think it's cool, it's not just like the best-selling truck. It's the best-selling vehicle, period.
Vehicle.
The end. All of them. Yeah.
And a lot of that has to do with fleets, which is, contractors buy the F-150 and landscapers buy the F-150. It is a workhorse. It is a machine. It is the new mule of America. It is America's horse.
America's horse is the
Ford F-150.
Except given how many of them there are around, mules are sterile. So I don't know if mule is necessarily the right.
Have you put two F-150s together? They're not making more F-150s that way.
I mean, you could put two F-150s together and one could charge the other one.
So. That's true. So there's a lot of titillation, but there's no baby F-150s being born. There's no Ford Mavericks popping out the bed after 6 months, 9 months. I don't know what the gestation period is of the Ford F-150, if it were
period.
fertile. But the F-150 Lightning, the big deal about this is that, again, number one selling vehicle in America, huge fleet, contractor, blah, blah, workhorse, work mule, whatever you want to call it.
Work mule.
Elephant for the United States, and they made an EV out of it. And it's not just, they didn't like try to make it all fancy. They didn't change anything. They essentially just said, hey, let's take the F-150, take the motor bits out and put some electric bits in and then just call it a day. You have the giant, frunk, which is actually pretty cool. My whole deal with frunks is if they're small, I just don't care. There's no point. This one is like a proper front. You can put things in it. So if you go shopping, you don't want to put them in the cab of the car because people can look in and see them. You don't want to put them in the bed because people can just grab them out. You can put them in the giant frunk, which I did today. I had to go buy dog food. I had to go to Home Depot. I had a lot of little errands.
Did you buy mulch?
I did not buy mulch.
Dang it, Roberto.
We actually need mulch, but I have not bought mulch.
You should have just bought one little bag of mulch and remulched a small section of garden area. Just like one bag.
One area is all pristine mulch and the rest of it just all faded.
Right. But as you get your trucks, it'll just gradually bring them all back to pristine. One bag this week, one bag next week, one bag in 3 weeks.
One bag of mulch at a time. A Ford F-150 Lightning, it is... I'm just going to say the best F-150 outside of like one big important area, which is towing. If you're towing around town, if you're using it for work, you need to tow, you know, a little generator. You got to tow, you know, the
Well, except you don't really need a generator.
Yeah. Well, you actually don't even need the generator, but you need to tow the cement mixer, like all the sort of workhorse towed of around town things you need to do. Awesome. If you want to tow it to the lake with your boat, don't.
Well, it depends how far the lake is.
Unless the lake is pretty close. If the lake, I live in California where lakes are few and far between, and most of them are mostly empty. Thanks, climate change. So, yeah, the Ford F-150, I've been driving it around. It has I have the extended battery version, which means it has a 131 kilowatt hour battery pack, which is enormous. That's a lot
biggity
of battery.
Big. That's a lot of
biggity
battery.
Big. As the kids say, biggity big.
Biggity big.
Mm-hmm. According to Nicole.
Me, is, yes, because I'm all with the kids.
I'm assuming he's younger than me. So that is is the dual e-motor extended range battery. It's a $10,000 option if you want to go 300 and I believe it's 20 miles. Yes, 320 miles in this vehicle. If you don't want to do that, you can get the regular range battery. It's 230 miles. I did a range test with this vehicle, the same range test I do for all the vehicles, and I got 322. So Ford is, you know, same thing with the Mach-E. They're just dead on with their EPA their EPA tests. So, I mean, you get what you get is essentially what I'm saying. If you're concerned that it's going to be like 20% below compared to other, no, dead on. So good for them on that. It is not necessarily, but it is still a truck. And this is the thing that people need to realize is that these are still trucks. Trucks are not necessarily efficient. Mm-hmm. If you buy an F-150, it's not going to get the same gas mileage as a Ford Focus. If you get the F-150 Lightning, it's not going to get the same efficiency as, say, a Mach-E. I think I was getting like 2.3 kilowatts, 2.2 or 2.3 kilowatt hours per...
Or miles per kilowatt hour?
Miles per kilowatt hour, sorry. 2.3 miles per kilowatt hour. So, yeah, it's still a truck. Now, that doesn't go away. It still has the front of it is essentially just a giant billboard for Ford, a big flat space. There is a little bit of, you know, they did kind of smooth it out a little bit to make as an EV, but it's still a big flat.
I mean, something that large, you know, even if you make it really slick and have a low coefficient of drag, you still have a lot of frontal area. And, you know, drag is, you know, frontal area times coefficient of drag. If your frontal area is big, you're going to have a lot of drag no matter how slippery it is.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And plus you have a bed. And there's a lot of things that work against trucks when it comes to any sort of coefficient. Like no one, yeah, you can cover it all up and try to make it look like a Cybertruck, but that's not even a real thing yet. So Ford has a real thing, Cybertruck, not so much. There's like two or three out in the world somewhere. There's a
pop up once in a while.
A lot more F-150s in the world. They're actually selling to people. It's really quick. It's you know, and it's an EV. I think it's like 4-ish seconds, 0 to 60. No matter what trim level you get, they're all dual motor. They're all wheel drive. So you're still, you know, but it's quick enough where I didn't think about it when you're thinking about driving a truck. And when I went to leave an intersection, I accidentally hurt my wife. She was like,
hopefully she was in the seat, belted in at the time.
Yeah, she's in the seat, she was bolted. I startled my wife. How about that? Okay. I don't think she's not in pain or we had to go to the hospital.
Like, how hard did you accelerate, dude?
I didn't start it. That's the thing, is I didn't accelerate that much, but it's so quick off the line. And so that's a thing that I guess if you want to do trucks, you can, which I see a lot of trucks barreling down the freeway at some ungodly speed, even though gas is... I mean, it's under $6 a gallon now because gas prices are going down, but still, like, $5.70 is still a lot of money.
Still not cheap.
Yeah, still not cheap. Cheaper, not cheap.
Cheaper, but still expensive.
Cheaper, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I got the, we had the, I know, I have the XLT? Yeah, I had the XLT. Oh, they were going to give me another one, but I wanted the XLT. XLT, nice inside. It has that little folding, like, armrest. You can put the
Work surface. The work surface. The cookie table.
The cookie table.
That's for the cookie table.
You can put your laptop there, or a burrito.
Or a whole dozen crumble cookies will fit nicely on it.
You could put a cheese board on it.
A charcuterie.
You could put a plate of ribs on it if you love ribs.
Maybe you could fit a whole rack in there. I feel like a medium pizza, large not so much, but a medium definitely a small pizza.
Yeah, you could put a medium pizza on. You could put two smalls,
Oh, two smalls. You could each have your own personal size pizza.
Yeah. Or you could share. I want this one, you want that
one. Half and half.
There are just so many ways that you can use an F-150.
So many ways you can use that as a food table.
You can open up the frunk, and there's power everywhere. I think that you can get up to 11 outlets. You can open up the frunk. You can plug your stuff in there. There's a power outlet in the dash. So if you need your laptop or a blender for your new parties, you can do it in the trunk, or not the trunk, in the bed. There's power back there. You can charge another, car. You can charge another vehicle, another EV. I think it's 9.6 kilowatts. It's got a lot. There is a lot going on with this truck, and it's exactly what Ford needed to do with this vehicle. And needed to do to sort of really push EVs forward. The vehicle I got, the F-150 Lightning, was the XLT. Started at $53,000, $52,900, $740, and then the destination is $1,700. Fine. Then they put $9,500, the $10,000 battery pack, and then there was some equipment, $9,500 on that, and then a tow package was $250, and then some lockable storage, and then the spray-in tough bed liner, which is $600. Overall, at the end of the day, $75,000, which if you're looking at Ford F-150s and you see them on the road, that's not that bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like it's a lot of money, and it seems like a lot of money for a truck until you look at the average purchase price of an F-150, and it's up there.
Yeah.
What was it, 75, 74?
Trucks are not cheap. The average truck is not cheap.
Yeah,
I guess.
I think average transaction price on an F-Series, on an F-150 now, is somewhere around $52,000 or $53,000.
Yeah, so that includes all the fleets. That includes all the Ford Pros, which there's a less expensive version of this vehicle for fleets and for people who actually need to do work with this vehicle. It's got a smaller infotainment system screen.
Yeah, it's only 12 inches.
That screen's really
so
big.
So tiny.
Yeah.
It's fine. It does wireless CarPlay and Android Auto, so if you're into that. It didn't have a charging pad anywhere, though.
Really?
Wireless charging? I think that's probably something they just... Or I just couldn't find it because there's so many cubby holes in the F1.
It got lost in all the features.
It got lost. Hey, I'm going to look
real quick.
Because
you had that medium pizza sitting on the table and you just didn't see it.
Yeah, who cares about any of that stuff when you got a medium pizza? Overall, you still have the Ford sensing system, which is nice, especially when you're backing out of spots with a giant truck. It didn't have a Blue Cruise, so I didn't get to test that, but they are getting better with Blue Cruise, so I'm assuming that, that'll just continue to get better, I hope. Good on them for making things better. I had the tailgate step, LED box lighting, 20-inch alloy dark gray wheels, the whole, shebang.
Hey, those 20s are good for an extra 20 miles of range over the 22s on the Platinum. So
you should always get the smaller wheels.
Absolutely, especially on a truck.
It's on a truck, on a car, on everything, because unless you're more show than go, I have to look beautiful, that's fine. But at the end of the day, more sidewall means it's going to be a nicer ride.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on where, as a kid, I was like, yeah, I've had big 17s on my Del Sol with sport springs. And then I drove it through San Francisco and it was like a Tease rattling extravaganza. I had race springs in the trunk. I'm like, well, I'm not putting those on. I'm never putting those on.
When I bought my first Mustang back in 1990, It was a 91 5-liter LX, and that was the first year that they went from 15 to 16-inch wheels on the 5-liters. And it's like, wow, these things are so big compared to, you know, everything else. And it's like, now it's like, those are puny.
Yeah, I had 13s on my Civic, and then I put 15s on it. And I remember I was like, wow, I'm the man. Oh, young Robbie.
But young, crazy Robbie.
Young, crazy Robbie. Anyway, Ford F-150 Lightning, a great truck, a great F-150. If you're looking for a truck, especially a work truck, you could probably get the Pro. We can get the Pro one.
The Pro is actually a really good bargain.
It is a good bargain. That's like the one to get, really. To be honest, yeah. Get the Pro and then just put the bed lining in and then you're done. Everything else is just
$40,000 out the door. And, you know, at least until the end of the year, you still get a $7,500 federal tax credit on Ford EVs. They're probably going to hit their 200,000 limit sometime later part of third quarter. So until the end of the year, you get the full tax credit, and then next year it'll start to phase out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Get while the getting's good, people.
Yeah.
Even though the tax credit should not fade out as far as, well, anyway, I've made that. I've whined about the fact that we're telling people, telling automakers, you did a good job. Now you don't get any money.
Right. Yeah. Now you're penalized. We gave you a bonus, but now we're taking it away.
No more bonus. Oh, well. I guess at some point everyone's going to be past that thing.
Yeah. Toyota just passed the 200,000 mark end of the last quarter.
Yeah. It's all the
They start hybrids. Their phase out in October.
They sell a lot of hybrids.
Yeah. Hybrids and plug-ins. They've sold a surprising number of Prius Primes. They've sold about 120,000 Prius Primes, amazingly enough.
Oh, no, that makes sense. Because the Prime, because people were already hacking the Prius to make it a plug-in hybrid.
Yeah.
There was a couple on my street when I lived in San Francisco. You could see them, like, they were just like, it was just like a plug that you just, like, crammed into like, one of the bumpers. I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And then the Prius. And people were like, you got to do it. And Toyota was, you know, I don't know.
There used to be a couple of companies that sold kits to do those retrofits. You'd take everything out of the trunk and drop a battery in there and hopefully gently lower a battery.
Slam! Just drop that sucker right in there.
Slam!
Yeah.
So, yeah. Ford F-150 Lightning. I have to do some more hauling probably tomorrow with it. So, yeah.
Go grab some more mulch.
I wish there was a Maverick electric. That's my takeaway.
Yeah, well,
that would be nice.
There's some spy photos.
I would like
that indicate that there might be a plug-in hybrid Maverick soon. So
that's cool too. All right, yeah. I guess I'm fine with the plug-in hybrid Maverick.
Yeah. All right, Nicole, you didn't have anything this week, right?
I had we had some mechanical difficulties, I guess, with the vehicle that was slated for me. So I got an extra week in the Altima that I drove last week, which continues to be exactly the same as it was. It did not change since the last episode we recorded.
No new colors.
It didn't just suddenly change color. It didn't change trims. It didn't suddenly morph sitting in my
driveway. The tires didn't get 2 inches larger?
No, nothing happened. I was really disappointed. I thought it might just evolve just sitting in the – it did not evolve. It stayed the same. Terribly disappointing. I know. I was completely misled by the marketing. But, yeah, so same car I had last week. So.
Well, I guess that's what happens when you don't have over-the-air update capabilities.
Exactly. They couldn't make all that stuff better. Dang it. Come on, Nissan. Step up your game.
All right. Well, I was supposed to have the Cadillac CT5 Blackwing, but it had been damaged during a previous loan, and they were waiting on parts for it. So instead, they sent me the 2022 Chevrolet Bolt EUV Premier with Super Cruise.
Wow.
Last year, when they before they did the big recall on the Bolts, they had a local drive program here in Detroit. And so I had a chance to spend a couple of hours with a Bolt EUV a little over a year ago. And so this is the first time I had a chance to spend extended time with it. And, you know, if you've ever been in a Bolt, this is basically the same thing, but 6 inches longer. so you got extra rear leg room. It's the same height as the regular Bolt. A little more cargo space, a little more rear seat space. And that's good, you know, and it also has all the other upgrades that they did to the Bolt and also for the EUV last year. So it's got restyled front fascia. The regular Bolt is the front fascia is a little bit taller. The hood's a little more horizontal. So it has a little more, you know, crossover-ish hint to it. This takes that a step further. Still isn't really a crossover, but, you know, kind of sort of looks vaguely like a small crossover. Same powertrain, same battery that's in the regular Bolts. The interior was extensively redone for the new one because one of the complaints since the Bolt came out in 2017 was a lot of people complained about the hard plastics and how it, you know, felt kind of cheap. You know, I always thought, you know, they had nice texturing. Yes, it was hard plastics, but it had nice texturing on it. So it didn't necessarily feel as really cheap as a lot of cars with hard plastics. But this EUV had some nice soft touch surfaces in there. Same 10-inch center display and digital instrument cluster that's been on the Bolt since the beginning. It has updated seats, which are also a bit more comfortable than they were before. Again, that was one of the other complaints about the Bolt, is some people found that the seats were not very comfortable. The front seats in particular were not very comfortable. I never really had an issue with them, but these, you know, these are a little better, a little more padding added to them. The back seats for a car this small are shockingly roomy. You know, and being an EV is, you know, part of what helps that. Got 150 kilowatt motor, 200 horsepower motor. So this thing is reasonably quick. You know, it'll do 0 to 60 in about 6.5 seconds, which is more than fast enough for what almost anybody needs. It did pass the paddleboard test, which is, you know, opened it up and put my my inflatable paddleboard in the back, and it fits comfortably as along with a couple of beach chairs and a bag with some towels and assorted other stuff to go to the lake. There was more than enough electrical power to use my electric pump to inflate the paddleboard when we got to the lake. Took Daisy along with us. She was fine in the back seat. She had plenty of room in the back seat. And we paddled around the lake with her sitting on the front of the paddleboard. So that was fun.
You didn't send pictures this time. She was so cute last time you sent pictures.
Yeah, I didn't take my bag from my phone, you know, to keep it waterproofed. let's see what else. This one was equipped with Super Cruise. The Bolt still has the first generation of Super Cruise because it doesn't have the newer updated electrical architecture that's on other GM EVs and some other vehicles. So it doesn't get the second generation that can do the auto lane changing and assorted other features. So this is basically the same system that launched on the Cadillac CT or the CT6 back in 2017. And it's still, it has been improved since then, but it's still the same basic feature set. And it still works really, really well. You know, I had driven the F-150 about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And both the F-150 and the Rivian, which doesn't have hands-free driving capability, both of those tended to wander more within the lane. They're staying within the lane, but they didn't do as good a job of staying like right rock solid in the center of the lane. The Bolt, rock solid in the center of the lane all the time. The system really works really well. And it's the only one that does, as you're driving down the road, as you're coming up on a curve, it knows from the maps that there's a curve, knows what the radius of the curve is. If your speed's a little bit above what's optimal for that curve, it'll slow you down a few miles an hour as you go through the curve and then resume your previous speed as you exit the curve. You know, something that Ford really needs to get on the ball and do, and instead of just having, you know, just saying, oh, put your hands back on the wheel, please. You know, so GM's really doing it right as far as these types of systems go. The Bolt EUV base price for the 2022 models for the Premier, which is the higher trim level that I had on this one, was $37,500. And then the Sun and Sound package added another $2,500. So that's the premium audio system. And the Chevrolet Infotainment 3 Plus with navigation. If you don't get that, if you just get the base infotainment system, it actually still has navigation. Or it doesn't have navigation, but it has support for wireless Android Auto and Apple CarPlay. So you can just use your Google Maps or Apple Maps. $2,200 for Super Cruise, and $395 for the bright blue metallic paint, which I would highly recommend. It's an excellent color. So the grand total, including destination, $995, came to $43,585. Now,
okay.
About a month or so ago, we talked about GM announcing that they were lowering the price for the Cruise for the 2022 or 2023 model year. So those, when they come out sometime in July or August, they will have a sticker price that is about $6,000 less than the 2022 models. Shortly after making that announcement, they also decided, you know what, for people that have bought the 2022 models and paid the extra money, we're basically going to give you the difference. So there, if you buy a 2022 Bolt or Bolt EUV right now, you will get a $5,900 rebate on those vehicles. So that brings this price down to $37,500 for this version that, you know, is pretty much loaded with everything. You can also get the base Bolt EUV. The base price on the Bolt EUV for the 22s is about $35,000, so that'll get you down to about $29,000 with that rebate. So you can get this car, you can go buy this right now for about $29,000, including delivery, which is actually quite reasonable. Most of the driving I did was actually highway driving because I had a bunch of appointments in various places. And so my overall average for the week was about 3.7 miles per kilowatt hour, which is slightly better than the Lightning. It's got a range of 247 miles, which this would easily do. When I was driving around town, you know, doing a loop around town, I was actually getting about 4.7 miles per kilowatt hour. So if you're doing, you know, more of a mix of driving or predominantly around town, you can actually get, you know, close to 300 miles or more out of this car. So, you know, you're looking at, you know, a sub $30,000 EV with lots of room for four adults and some stuff and a paddleboard and other stuff in the back, under 30 grand. So, you know, if the only downside to the Bolt and the Bolt EUV is they're still limited to only 50 kilowatt DC fast charging. So
yeah, that's the bummer.
Not great for road trips. It'll take you a while to charge for road trips. But if, you know, if you're not taking road trips and you're driving it around town or even, you know, around your region and you're charging and you can charge at home, it's a fantastic option. So that's the Chevy Bolt EUV.
Chevy.
Yeah.
Chevy.
All right. Let's get into a few of the stories of the week. Okay. So,
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mazda apparently has not given up on diesel engines yet, amazingly enough.
Why not? Just keep them going.
Well, go, Mazda, go.
Surprisingly, the 2-liter four-cylinder diesel that they've had, that they briefly sold here in the CX-5, is actually quite popular in Japan, I'm told.
But this isn't Japan.
Yeah, you're right. It's not Japan. And but Mazda has just recently launched a new model in Europe called the CX-60, which is a little bit slightly larger than the CX-5, and will probably be the replacement for the CX-5 here in the next year or so. And they launched it over there with a 3-liter inline six-cylinder gas engine, which has been rumored for a while. And they just announced a second option for the CX-60, a 3.3-liter inline-six diesel for Europe.
Dun, dun, dun. Mm-hmm. For Europe.
Why?
I think people are still buying. I don't know what the split is on diesels in Europe.
I think it's still around 20%. You know,
yeah, it's
back in 2015, it was like 60%.
Yeah, so it's not doing great, especially as Europe is really pushing EVs. It's a last, like, well, we made it. Let's just get it out there and get as many
just
as we
it.
Sell. And then this is how we make our money. And then we can hopefully start making EVs that people want. I hope that's the, I don't know. I feel like that's the plan.
You know what?
We've already done all the work on it. We've been working on it for, I don't know, probably like 10 years. We really thought this EV thing was going to be like a fad, like the internet and, clean drinking water, but it wasn't. So
who knew?
Oh man, we already did all this work. So let's try to sell as many as possible in Europe and in Japan and hope for the best.
Yeah. This engine, they've got two variants of it, 200 horsepower and 245 horsepower, or 254, sorry. The 200 horsepower version apparently gets 48 miles per gallon on the WLTP cycle in Europe, which is probably going to be, about 39, 40 miles per gallon EPA equivalent, which is actually, surprisingly efficient for,
not bad.
For an engine this size, with this much torque, it's 407 foot pounds of torque, and has a 48 volt mild hybrid system, but it just seems like, a company like Mazda that has limited resources, they're a relatively smaller automaker. They sell about 1.5 million vehicles globally every year.
Wow.
And it seems like if you've got limited resources, why would you spend it on designing this? I mean,
it's a weird choice.
I love diesel engines. They're great.
Yeah,
but it just seems like a
I feel like
strange
it was just momentum
decision.
Within the company. They were already working on it.
Yeah,
it turns out EVs were coming quicker than they anticipated, and they're like, oh well, we're already like 80% done.
I mean, that could be like one of, because really, like you might be right, Rob, because it's not like they design a car this week that comes out next week. They're going so many years ahead that
especially
they're trying
Mazda,
to get right.
Yeah,
so they're
a small company. They
so it's
move.
Not like, yeah, and so they're trying to plan out like so far in advance. Maybe it was a situation where they just went, okay, this is where we're going to go, and it's like, oh crud. Well, we got to keep going in this direction. We got to finish with this, and then we can switch gears. But it's not as easy for them to make that switch as it would be for some.
I think they're just hoping to break even on research and development of this engine. I think that's where they're hoping for right now. They're like, we just got to break even.
Let's not lose money. Please don't let us lose money. Just don't let us lose money.
Man.
Just a break even, guys. That's all we're looking for. Just enough.
Oh, maybe we can.
You think they're
going to
do
Miatas.
It?
Miatas.
Now, maybe if they put this engine in the Miata. No, that'd be a good idea.
Sam, stop.
Big, heavy.
I wouldn't want a diesel Line Miata.
Six. Can you imagine what that would sound like in a Miata?
There's nowhere to hide the sound. Like, clack, 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 clack,
there'd clack, be clack, no clack. Way to hide anything. It's too small, the packaging. Oh, my God.
Miata. We've already ruined
Miata.
The Miata.
Don't worry. We won't do that to you, Miata. We won't let them. We'll stop Mazda before we let them do that.
Okay. So, anyway, we'll probably never see this engine in the U.S.
Oh, God.
Anyway,
this is never
so.
Coming to the United States.
Yeah.
No.
I think they only sold about 2,000 of the CX-5 diesels.
Jeez.
Yeah. That's not worth it. It's not worth them. Especially for a tiny company.
You need time.
All right. Mr. San Francisco.
Yes.
Apparently, you're not allowed to park in your own driveway in San Francisco.
All right.
I know in a lot of communities with HOAs, you're not allowed to park more than one or two vehicles in your driveway, and you're not allowed to have, anything that isn't, pristine and attractive in your driveway. But to not be able to park anything at all in your driveway, what's going on here?
So, okay, so first of all, I'm going to preface this with anytime one thing happens to one person in San Francisco, the entire nation believes that it's indicative of the entire city.
It is. is. It's not, Robbie. Oh, it is.
It's like every time, like, someone in Florida did something. You're like, that's not all of Florida.
You mean a sample size? Well, but the thing is, with Florida, these things happen so frequently.
That's true.
You know, okay, it's like Florida. A cliche that
the
you know, there has to be some
deserved.
Truth in there.
Yeah.
But so is this ridiculous? Yes. Would this happen in another city? I'm sure it has, to be completely honest. This person has been parking in this like little parklet in front of their house forever. They have
34 years.
Cut out, like 34 years or whatever.
And it looks like a legit parking space.
Yeah, it looks like a little legit like little parking space.
Yeah.
I'm sure at some point they had the little carve-out done in there. And no one ever told the city. And then one day, some bored person on the parking department was like, "Hey, wait a second. This doesn't look like a parking spot. You can't park in this spot because it probably wasn't designated as a parking spot before." Because what happens in San Francisco is that you see a lot of lawns that have been concreted over. People will put concrete on their lawn. They'll remove
really?
It and then they park their car on it. Yeah. It's
is
very
that,
difficult.
Is that legal or not legal at all?
That's the thing.
Okay.
It comes down to the weirdness of it. People just do it. It's like double parking. Everyone in San Francisco double parks. We all double park. That's just something you have to do in order to live in the city. And we've all gotten a ticket. And we're all like, all right, fine.
Like because for living here.
It's the cost of living. There are two wonderful feelings when you live in San Francisco. The first one is finding an apartment. The second one is finding a parking space. Like, you're like, oh, I found a parking space. You're so happy. There's far more people in San Francisco now than there were when I moved here in 2000. There's like 150,000 more people, which means there's more vehicles. And, of course, Uber and Lyft have made it even worse.
Uber and Lyft.
It's sort of a nightmare. And so, you know, they have their parking spot. And they think everything's cool. And then the city's like, nah. And I'm like, well, it's a jerk move. But it's also bureaucracy, and it's the same sort of bureaucracy that someone in Des Moines, Iowa, is probably dealing with right now, and in Kansas City, and in all these other cities. But because it's San Francisco, San Francisco is an easy target.
So just to reinforce your idea that San Francisco is an easy target. So we've lived in the same neighborhood for 25 years, and all of a sudden, arbitrarily, at one point, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, they're like, "You can't park in this street overnight." We're like, since what? And they literally came around in the middle of the night and like everybody who happened to randomly have one of their cars parked in the street where it's not even like there's parking spaces. It's so empty. Like just park. And they gave everybody little parking tickets.
Come on,
and then they came through and we asked, we're like, what? And like, I called cause we got one. I'm like, what? What's that? What did I do wrong? I parked and like, you can't park on your street. And I was like, since when? She's like, since like 1912. I'm like, oh, okay. Apparently it's been an ordinance that's been on the books since like the beginning of time. And arbitrarily, some random guy decided to start enforcing it. And now if you park on the street in our neighborhood, you'll get a ticket.
Apparently there must have been a budget shortfall this year.
I know, exactly.
San Francisco doesn't have a budget shortfall.
So it's
Come
the
on.
Same weirdness as San Francisco. Like, everyone's been doing it forever, and yet suddenly like, oh, I guess we can't now? Oh, thanks.
It's
okay.
Really ridiculous because people park their motorcycles on the sidewalk, which is completely illegal. And I've never parked a motorcycle on the sidewalk. I've never parked my Vespa on the sidewalk. I always park it in a garage or on
Good
the street.
Good boy, Robbie.
And
I'm
no
proud
one
of you.
Gets a ticket. No one, they should be getting tickets because they're blocking the sidewalk. There's all these, you know, people park their cars on the sidewalk. And you're just like, you can't park your, because you're blocking the sidewalk. But all, you know, but now we got these, this one couple has this one house. And, yeah.
And the thing is, this wasn't just any ticket. This was a $1,500 fine.
I know. How did it get to be that much? That's such a weird number. It feels like they ignored something for a while.
It's the accumulated fine for 34 years of parking illegally in the same spot.
Yeah, once they admitted it, it's like, wait a second, click, 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 click. Now you owe us $250,000.
I don't know if they're looking at, because you're not supposed to park on, you know, on the sidewalk, but I don't think it's $1,500 fine. It's such a weird, weird little.
Well, and they're not
story.
Even on the side. They're not on the sidewalk.
But there's also a cutout. So at some point, someone was like, "Yeah, that's fine." Yeah. Like, was there not a permit for the cutout? Is it all because like, oh, that cutout's not supposed to be there, so we're going to charge you for that? And then you've been parking there, so we're going to charge you for that. Is it cumulative of all these things that apparently they've been doing wrong for a million years?
And just no one called them out.
It's sort of, no. It's I I think there's a lot more to the story that it has to do with permitting and where they're parking than what we know. But at the end of the day, it's ridiculous. It's also ridiculous that now Nicole can't park on the street.
I know. And like my neighborhood, there's like literally it's like there is no – we don't even have numbered or anything or like parking space lines. We're so rural, there's no lines. Just make up your own spot when you do park during the day.
Like a regular neighborhood.
It's a regular neighborhood, but no, you
just
do not
park
here. Just not at night. If you're on the road, on the street after midnight, I think was what the guy said. After midnight, you're officially considered overnight parking, and then you can't park. So I'm like, so what if I like went to a, we had friends and we went to a late movie? Like, quick, get home! We're gonna get a ticket. You parked outside the drive. Yeah.
See, no. That's and there you go. So that's where that's the issue, is that the parking enforcement. Is sort of ridiculous.
Weird
and ridiculous and arbitrary.
Mm-hmm.
And these people in San Francisco are getting hosed by it. And Nicole is apparently also getting
hosed. You see, out here in rural New Hampshire, dang it, I feel for those people in San Francisco. Except my fine, I think I paid $10. So I mean, it's a little bit more affordable.
Oh, well, yeah, that's...
But I can't get too upset, bent out of shape for the $10. It wasn't over $1,000, but I was still like, why?
It was $45. I remember it was like $25, and then I got a ticket. It was $45 a few years later, and then like years after that, I got the ticket. These are all the same ticket, like double parking or
yeah.
And it was $75. So over the years, it had gone up. I lived in the city for 20 years, 19 years. I don't know, a long time. And but every few years they go up. But I didn't get a lot of tickets because I'm very careful. I'm always keeping an eye out. I only got two double parking tickets. So,
good work.
Again, for the most part, nicely done. The city's like fun. Cops will drive by. They're like, yeah, whatever.
Not
There's other issues going on in the world right now.
I feel like in San Francisco, there's a lot of additional issues rather than you and your motorcycle to worry about.
Yeah.
All right. Right now, Ford is on the fourth generation of the Escape that they launched what, 3 years ago. And did you say Escape?
Escape. Because I watched Finding Nemo 1,000 times with my children. Escape.
All right. Anyway, when they designed this current generation of Escape, they decided to split it basically into two vehicles and make one that was more, more car-like, which is the one that is called the Escape now. And then the other one, they decided to make a little more rugged, off-roady, more like a real SUV, and they called that the Bronco Sport. Apparently, that's not enough, because evidently now they're looking at doing a Escape Active, which...
What does that mean?
I don't know.
With it, does it give you an idea? You? Blah, 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 let's see. It doesn't tell you why, right? Like, what does Active mean? Is the other one the Escape Sedentary?
I guess. Yeah, I guess, this is supposed to be a little bit more lifestyle-ish, I don't know.
It's the jazz hands version of the standard Escape.
I feel
Escape.
Like that platform having the Escape, the Maverick, and the Bronco Sport is great. Boom, there you go. You got three solid cars. The Escape's of those three vehicles, the Escape's the weakest one. The Maverick... The Maverick and the Bronco Sport are the ones to get, and the Bronco Sport they can't even make enough. So now they're making another vehicle on the same platform. Just don't.
just use that capacity to make Mavericks.
Make more Mavericks. People want the Maverick.
Yeah.
Got a man chasing me down on a motorcycle because I was driving a Maverick. He's like, is that a Maverick? I'm like, yeah. Oh my god, is it yours? I'm like, no. He's like, I ordered ours. Ours is coming. I haven't been able to look at it. I'm like, yeah, go for it and look around.
Yeah,
when I had the Escape, no one followed me. No one cared.
Yeah.
No one cares at all.
No.
It just blends into the background.
It's a whoosh.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the one that they have the spy photos of here on Autoblog has a refresh. It's obviously a mid-cycle refresh, so new front fascia. It doesn't really look any more rugged or anything than a current Escape. So
it doesn't
I'm
look
not even
more
sure.
active to you?
No, not really.
It looks like every other SUV in the world, other crossover in the world. It's come on, guys. You have three vehicles on this platform. Don't make a fourth. Or if you're going to make a fourth, make it cool.
Yeah, do something distinctive.
Come on, you're killing it lately, Ford. Don't mess it up now.
Don't screw it up. You're on roll. Come on.
You know what?
Here's the thing.
They escape active. They'll sell like 200,000 units.
Probably.
Is this just a trademark, or are they actually doing it?
They trademarked the active name.
But they haven't said anything other than we've trademarked it.
They have active on some models in Europe.
Oh.
Like they have the and there's rumors of a Fusion active wagon coming, which is sort of an Outback, Subaru Outback style vehicle.
Ooh. Active is weird.
That would actually be pretty cool. Yeah, and in Europe they have the EcoSport active and the Fiesta active, which they get an extra inch of ride height. Doesn't look like this Escape in these photos has any extra ride height, though.
It does not. So,
I don't know. All right, but that's not the only new trademark application from Ford. They also have Thunder for trucks.
I like that one, Thunder.
So the story in The Drive is speculating that the Thunder name will be used for off-road EVs. But I don't know. I mean, that why? You know, I mean, they already have Raptor and they have Tremor. You know, why not use one of those names? You know, if you're going to do a more off-roady F-150 Lightning, you know, call it a F-150 Lightning Tremor, you know, or Raptor.
But it does say that there's a Lightning and now there's Thunder.
Yeah. Well, what I was thinking was what would make more sense with the Thunder name. You know, Thunder's, you know, kind of maybe a little less powerful than Lightning. You know, do that as a plug-in hybrid. So have a plug-in hybrid truck.
Oh.
You got a plug-in hybrid Maverick coming. There's probably going to be a plug-in hybrid Ranger and probably a plug-in version of the F-150. Why not, you know, call those the Thunder. So
that could work.
And then they can get that AC/DC song.
Yeah.
I really think they're just doing it to get that AC/DC song.
That's it. The entire marketing strategy behind the brilliant minds of Ford.
They have an excuse to use Thunderstruck for commercial.
Yeah. Yeah. I would totally name something Thunder just if I could get AC/DC song.
That's a solid reason. I'm down with that.
I worked at a place where they were trying to get the rights to an AC/DC song for like whatever. And they couldn't do it. They were like, no. And I was like, aw.
Wah, wah.
So, but maybe Ford could do it because, you know, Angus? I believe Angus is a big, he's a car aficionado.
Yeah, I think he had a Ford GT for a while.
Or is it Brian? No, wait, Brian's dead, isn't he? Oh, man, I don't know enough about it.
All right. Speaking of EVs, Tesla will apparently finally start opening up some of their superchargers in the U.S. to non-Tesla vehicles.
This. Yes.
Yeah. What do you think?
Well,
would you go use a supercharger instead of Electrify America?
I wrote an article like 6 years ago saying they should do this. I talked to somebody, let's just say at a car company that starts with T about it. And I was like, yes, you should do this. And all the Tesla people yelled at me. No, you're just a stupid. But Tesla that's the killer. First of all, that's the killer app for a Tesla is the charge station. Because everything else, everyone's caught up to.
Yeah.
Everyone else is caught up to them. They've caught up to them in battery technology, motors, everything else that Tesla has. Everyone else is caught up to them technology wise, except for the supercharging network. And if this is a way for them to get money, that's great because they're going to charge money. It's probably going to be a premium if you want to charge the supercharger network, etc. But no, on one hand, I think it's a really good deal because it's going to make them money. And in the article I wrote 100 years ago, it's also a way to get people who are like, oh, I have a Hyundai Ioniq 5, but, you know, let's put a Model 3. You know, you're going to be pulling in with your other EV and see all these Teslas. And that's like, oh, maybe I should get a Tesla for my next vehicle. Or you can have a little showroom there. There's all these sort of conversion things that they can do at these supercharger networks, especially the really nice ones along interstates where you can probably maybe convert some of these other EV owners into Tesla owners. On the other hand, if this is the number one reason to buy a Tesla, you lose the number one reason to buy a Tesla. If you can do it in Ioniq 5, if you can do it in a Chevy Bolt, I think it's great for infrastructure overall for the entire industry. I don't know how great it is for Tesla though.
Yeah. I think the same thing. I don't know. I wonder how much. I mean, I think it would be a great boon for people saying, well, now I don't have to find a chart. It's like easy to find a Tesla supercharger. Those are easy to find comparatively. You see them everywhere. You don't even have to look for them when you're like stopping by roadsides. And if you're at any kind of, you know, remotely reasonable roadside stop, there's probably a Tesla supercharger right there. So you have to think about it. So it would make it more likely that you could think, okay, it would be really super easy to take that, drive that EV6 or that Ioniq 5 or whatever it is that you're driving. But I don't know. I'm not sure how much that benefits Tesla aside from the cash in their pocket for letting you use it. I don't know that that would convert someone. I mean, it could. You're right. I hadn't really thought about that. But would it really convert someone from going with a, you know, like, I'm going to ditch my Hyundai now and get a Tesla? You know, I don't know if that would happen.
Well, yeah, that's the problem. I think, you know, one other advantage that Tesla has is that, you know, their superchargers generally tend to be a lot more reliable than certain other companies like Electrify America. You know, you don't very often see people complaining about superchargers not working. You know, when you plug in a Tesla, it almost always gets used. Now, sometimes they don't run as fast as they should, but they usually don't not work at all.
I was at one in Las Vegas that was giving me 4 kilowatts. I was like, oh, man, this is going to take a while. And then the person left. The person who was parked next to me left, and it went up. And I was just like, oh, I'm never leaving this place. I hope I don't miss my meeting.
Yeah, you know, well, I think, you know, the other thing is that, you know, there's $7.5 billion of federal money from the infrastructure bill coming for charging infrastructure. And anybody that wants any of those dollars is going to have to make their chargers are going to have to be accessible to everyone. So if Tesla wants any of that money, which I'm sure they do, they will have to make their chargers open to everyone. They can't restrict them to any one brand of vehicle.
Well, that also opens up issues with reliability, because Tesla only has to work with Tesla.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's like you're plugging in your iPhone to your MacBook Air. It's just fine because it only has to work. It doesn't have to work with the Zoom. It doesn't have to work with, you know, Google or any of those other things. It just plugs right in. Now Tesla will have to bring in other automakers' vehicles and get the software to work. They have to work with other automakers to make sure the software on the Tesla superchargers works with the software on the vehicles they're doing. So you might, initially, I think there's going to be some hiccups just because it's not easy. You can ask Electrify America. They'll tell you.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if that does become a problem, if it's like the Tesla folks are still able to easily charge their Teslas and everybody else is like, dang it, this isn't doing what it's supposed to do, you know?
Yeah. And the other thing, you know, with the infrastructure bill is, you know, chargers that get funded through that bill will have to use CCS connectors. So they wouldn't be able to use the proprietary Tesla charging connector. So I'd be curious to see if Tesla starts deploying superchargers in North America, or at least in the U.S. with CCS. They already do in Europe, because they already mandated several years ago in Europe that all EVs have to use CCS. Mm-hmm. So the superchargers in Europe already have CCS connectors. But, you know, I'll be curious to see if they do that here, or if they just make customers use an adapter.
I think there'll be adapters available, because there'll be like one CCS charger.
Yeah.
And like 12 Tesla chargers. Initially, and you're like, well, if I just have the adapter, you just like plop, plop. I think that'll probably be what ends up happening. I don't know. I mean, I hope it comes to pass. I think, you know, again, Tesla supercharging network, you can't beat it. I could drive across the country. If you're driving across country and someone's like, well, I want to take a Tesla, I want to take a Hyundai Ioniq 5. I'm like, you know what? I really love the Hyundai Ioniq 5. But unless you want to do planning like you used to in the 90s, where you had like, you know, your map out, like, oh, we're going to do this road and this road and this road. That's what you have to do with an electric vehicle to drive across the United States. You have to actually plan it, or you can use a better route planner, but you still have to do some planning. Tesla is like, you get in the car, car's like, yeah, you can go to here and charge. And you know what? When you're done, go over there and charge. And you know what? Go over there. It's just seamless.
Yeah. When we drove down to Tennessee, that was my biggest frustration. It's like, if we wanted, you know, we just have a plug-in hybrid, so it's not like we had to charge, but it was still kind of that like, I don't want to have to stop here or have to stop there. Like, I just want to stop where I want to stop, and there aren't chargers everywhere we want to stop, and to heck with it, you know?
Mm-hmm. You do a lot of shopping at Walmart, though.
I would have to do a lot of shopping at Walmart.
All right. Speaking of shopping at Walmart, the GMC Hummer, you were complaining earlier, Robbie, about the efficiency of the F-150 Lightning. The Hummer is by far and away the least efficient EV on the market. I think it's rated at something like 47 MPGe, whereas the F-150 is about 70. And the Bolt EUV is 125. So I forget the name of this organization.
The ACEEE.
Yeah, it's the, let me find it here. It is the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy. And on their website, you know, one of the things that they do is they do a lot of research on, all kinds of energy efficiency things. And one of the things that they've done is they've built a site called Greener Vehicles, and they go through EVs and, figure out, how much energy are these things actually using, and a bunch of other stuff. And they give vehicles a score. And the worst EV that they've ever scored is the Bolt EV, or the Hummer EV,
The Hummer.
Say.
I'm shocked.
Which,
what? I tell you.
When they translate it with, what is the average CO2 mix, because the thing you got to remember about EVs, they don't have any direct emissions from the vehicle, but depending on where the electricity is coming from, right, there's still emissions associated with it. Mm-hmm. And the Hummer EV, based on the average mix of electricity sources in the U.S., emits 341 grams per mile of CO2. Now, compared to the old Hummer H1 20 years ago, that's actually really, really good, because the Hummer H1 did 889 grams of CO2 per mile. But the gas-powered Chevy Malibu that you can apparently still go out and buy, if you can find one somewhere, is rated only at 320 grams per mile. So it is more efficient and emits and has less emissions associated with it than a Hummer EV.
Currently based on how the grid is built.
Yeah.
Yes. That could change as the grid changes.
Yeah, it will.
As the grid continues to evolve, the plan is to make it cleaner and cleaner, which it is becoming cleaner and cleaner. And not because all these companies are all, they all love the environment. It's just solar and wind are actually really cheap compared to coal.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, we could build a peaker, or we could just get a bunch of solar, array, and throw some batteries in there, and that's way cheaper, and we can start it up anytime. We could just throw that in there within a few months as opposed to a couple years to build a disgusting, gross diesel and or coal peaker.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, the Hummer EV is ridiculous.
It is
ridiculous. There's nothing logical in any way, shape, or form.
No, it is. Everything about the Hummer EV is ridiculous. GM knows it's ridiculous. GM, they've had to have known it was ridiculous. I don't think they... We're going for, like, hey, look at this wonderful, like, green vehicle. It's wonderful and green compared to the H1.
And, if you want to see how different cars compare against each other, if you go to greenercars.org, I'll put the link in the show notes, you can see the full database and search through there and, find the greenest cars. The greenest car on their list is actually the aforementioned Toyota Prius Prime, which has a green score of 69, followed by the Hyundai Ioniq plug-in hybrid, which is now no longer available at 68, the Mini Cooper SE at 67, and the Mazda MX-30 actually does pretty well with 65, which is quite nice, but... doesn't have very much range, so there's that. And then, of course, the meanest, is the Hummer the Hummer is actually not the meanest. The Ram TRX is the meanest with a score of just 22.
Oh, jeez.
And the Jeep Wrangler, not the 4xe, but the regular Wrangler is at 28. So, that's not great. All right. final story is we've talked to Bolton before about dealer markups on new cars and, you know, some of the ridiculous markups that some dealers are charging with the limited availability that we have on a lot of models right now. So apparently there's a site out there called markups.org. And if you want to go through and check, you know, it's crowdsourced. So it's a database that somebody's put together, and you can search by model, search by location, and you can see what markups dealers are charging on various models. So around me here in Southeast Michigan, they've got six listings for the F-150 Lightning. The best is Bill Brown Ford in Livonia, not far from where I used to work. They have zero markup, and they're one of the biggest Ford dealers in the country. So they're not charging any markup on the Lightning. And also Preferred Ford is also not charging a markup. On the other hand, Milnes Ford, somewhere here in Michigan, is charging $20,000. So
$20,000?
Yep. Which is not the most we've seen on a Lightning. Yeah, there was another dealer that was charging like $69,000. It was basically 100% markup.
Wow.
So if you're looking to buy a car and you want to see what dealers are charging, or find a dealer that's not charging markups, you can go to markups.org and search and hopefully find a good deal on a new vehicle.
That's a really cool way to make sure that, like, before you get out there and you think like, oh, they have them in stock, and you get there, yeah, but we're going to charge you an arm and a leg to get it. Forget you. That's kind of cool.
There's a lot of places that won't even put the prices on the online anymore.
Right. Like, so you have no idea whether you're going to get there and the price is going to be reasonable or outrageous, yeah, which just seems wrong. I feel like if they're not going to put it online, I'm like, forget it. I'll go to the next guy in line.
Because that's
hiding something from me, you know? Yeah.
When we were buying the Hyundai, we were asking about a bunch of different cars at a bunch of different dealerships. And like a lot of places just wouldn't give us a price. They're like, oh, we won't want to make a deal until, you know, you get here. I'm like, well, I'm not coming
in. Yeah, no.
And I just told him, like, well, I'm not coming in. There's not, it's none of my, it's not to my, to, it doesn't help me to come in. Either you tell me what the price of the car is, or you just don't get money from me. And they decide not to get money from me, which is fine.
Yeah. So markups.org before you go car shopping. Good resource. Thanks to Jalopnik for that one. All right. Let's answer a few questions. Paul Kavanaugh asked, any predictions on the fate of the first Vietnamese car company to set up shop in the U.S.? That would be VinFast. One of the unique details about this company is that they are going to be the first in the U.S. to offer a separate lease for the battery for their EVs. So you buy the car and then you have a separate monthly payment for the battery. And, you know, upside of that is you get they'll guarantee the battery. You know, if the battery starts to degrade, they'll swap it out, no problem. You can also there's a couple of different tiers of battery leases based on how many miles you think you're going to drive. So you can have, if you're not going to drive that far, you can get the cheaper one. Or if you're going to be doing more driving, you can get the unlimited package. What do you guys think about VinFast and this battery deal?
The battery deal is not a deal.
It's not a deal? Why do you say it's not a deal?
It's not a deal because you're still paying for the lease of the car, and then you have to pay this additional amount. And the amount of miles you get is very low.
For the cheapest one, yeah.
It seems like a deal when you think about the idea of it. It seems like it's going to be – you're like, oh, this is going to be great. Then when you look at the details of the deal, it's kind of like maybe not so great.
Yeah. Well, and it would be better, if the EV was, if it was actually cheaper, but it's not, the vehicle itself is not actually that affordable. I mean, I think the base price is like $54,000, and that's before the battery lease. And have either of you had a chance to look at one of these in person yet?
No, I haven't. No. I don't think I've seen one. No.
Oh, I think I probably saw one at a car show.
I know, maybe at a car show, but that's about it.
Yeah, they had them at the New York Auto Show, and they were in L.A. as well. And the one when they were in LA, the ones they had there didn't have interiors yet, but the ones in New York, apparently I didn't get a chance to look at the interiors, but apparently they were not great.
Not so hot.
Yeah, the fit and finish. Although, you know, granted, they were pre-production cars. So, you know, we'll see, you know, when they actually get here. They're supposed to launch here by the end of the year. But, yeah, the pricing on these, you know, even with the battery lease is not, it doesn't sound like a great deal right now. So we'll see if they make some changes and some adjustments to that.
Yeah, I think they'll probably do away with those at some point once they come to market. But, you know, Hyundai, when they first came over here, their cars were horrible.
That's true.
It was pure trash. And I think what helped Hyundai is they came over around the same time as the Yugo. And so everyone just focused on the Yugo. That was so much worse. That was like a dumpster fire.
Literally.
It was literally a dumpster fire.
They did have a tendency to catch fire.
Yeah, or not shift gears. There was a lot of things they did or didn't do that they shouldn't have been doing as cars. So, you know, we'll see how it works out later on as time progresses. You know, a few years, 10 years from now, you know, 15 years. I mean, Hyundai's now, you're like, people ask me what kind of car. I'm like, have you looked at Hyundai's lately? So that's not a thing I would have said in the 90s.
No, and people still are surprised when you say Hyundai. I think if they haven't looked at one in a while, it's not on their list. Like, wait, that's a piece of junk. That's terrible. I'm like, clearly you have not looked at one in a while. Go find a dealership. Go look at one. You know.
Well, that should be one of their concerns. Is like coming over here. You need to come over here strong, because if you come over here with a Hyundai Excel, that sticks with you for decades.
Yeah, that it's so hard to break that reputation, because Hyundai is genuinely a great brand. It's a great value, but it is hard to convince people. I mean, people give you the stink eye when you suggest it like this, like you're nuts. It's like, when was the last time you drove a Hyundai? Like, well, I don't know. Like 15 years ago, they were, it's 15 years later. Give them a try now. And it's, people don't want to believe you. They really think you're nuts.
Yeah. All right. Marcello asks, he heard me on Leo Laporte's Tech Guy radio show, where I do a weekly segment every Sunday. And he says, hi, Wheel Bearings team. On the Tech Guy show on July 3rd, Sam suggested leasing over buying or financing an EV. This had me do a double take on what I was planning. Mm. Do you feel the same way if it's a luxury vehicle over $160,000? Thank you for your insight and your fantastic content. Marcello, P.S. I ordered a Taycan GTS. I'm expecting delivery this fall, August or September. So, first of all, I am very
jealous of Marcello getting a Taycan GT.
So
I don't even care what he does now. He's fine. Everything is downhill from this, though, sir. I'm sorry. The apex of your life is getting the Taycan GT.
What about the leasing question? Actually, I think last week we talked about the fact that Ford is now going to stop allowing buyouts, allowing you to buy your vehicle at the end of the lease if it's an EV. Does any of that change your opinion on leasing one way or the other?
I think if I couldn't buy it out, that would probably impact my decision. Because I think that would probably make me think twice about it.
I am team leasing. I think I've written like 3 articles about leasing EVs. there's a lot of reasons. One is in 3 years, you know, there's going to be different EVs. They're moving so quickly, the advances on these vehicles, especially battery technology. In 3 years, there might be something battery-wise that you're going to be like, oh, man, I can get 500 miles on a GTS now, as opposed to the 2-something that I can get in the one I just purchased. So there's that. And also luxury vehicles, most people kind of lease luxury vehicles. No one buys
much higher proportion of leases in the luxury market than in the mainstream market.
And then there's I don't think it's as big a concern as it used to be, but there's also battery degradation. If you have a GTS, you're probably going to be blasting that thing all over the place. And then you're like, well, I need a supercharge, which of course is going to lead to more battery degradation. So those are sort of I feel like the technology is moving really quickly, and then any issues, if you're concerned at all about battery degradation, if you can afford a lease, go for a lease. If it works, if it makes sense for you financially.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that. I think especially for EVs, you know, less so for gas engine vehicles, but for EVs, you know, what's going to be available 3 years from now is you know, you're going to have more selection, more models, more price points, more form factors. So it probably is a better idea to lease. Although if the supply chain crisis continues on,
oh God,
maybe you want to buy and, you know, and wait. Make sure that there's actually something else to replace it with at the end of the lease. Because yeah. if you lease and then you can't buy it out at the end of the lease and there's nothing available to buy to replace it, then it could be a problem.
Yeah.
All right. Last one is also another listener from the radio show. This is from Gina. She says, even though I'm not a huge car person, enjoy listening, purchased a used 2017 BMW i3 for $17,000 about 18 months ago. I had a battery charger installed at my home. I only get about 150 miles on a full charge, so I'm limited to where I can go. However, I generally stick close to home anyway. If I do need to travel, I rent a car. I'm just wondering, what do you think? At what point should I consider trading it in terms of its life expectancy? I do like it very much beyond all that. Well, first of all, I'll say that I think, you know, this is a great approach to take with EVs, you know, shorter range EVs. You know, if it can use it for your daily driving and, you know, on the occasional times when you need longer range, just rent a gas car.
Right.
But what do you think about when Gina should consider trading it in?
I would not trade it anytime soon.
Yeah,
it's a carbon fiber vehicle. You get like, a carbon fiber car for
$17,000.
Yeah, I don't like. Why would you trade that in? I would hold on
McLaren
to that.
You're talking McLaren technology, Formula One technology.
You're getting for bathtub, 17 grand. McLaren bathtub technology in your little i7 or your little i3. No, it's a great 150 miles, especially if you're just cruising around town. Yeah. Right. That's working for you, that's perfect.
Yeah, I would keep it if it's working for her all the time. If she doesn't need that more than 150, if she sticks close to home, then why do you need something else? If it's working and you're, you know, if you're not having to rent a car every other day because you need longer range, if it's like an occasional thing, then stick with what you got. This is working.
Yeah.
Yeah. That battery, you know, the battery in there is probably going to go, you know, at least, you know, it's probably still going to be good for you for at least another, you know, 7 to 10 years.
Yep.
By which time, you know, because it's not that big of a battery, you know, it's only like I think a 40 kilowatt hour battery in those later i3s, you know, it actually probably won't be that expensive to replace.
Oh, so, yeah, that's true. It's probably going to be...
Right?
No, if I could get an i3 for, like, nothing, I would totally... I remember when they were, like, super cheap.
Yeah.
Because because people were, like, freaked out about the range. You could get an i3 for, like, a nickel, and I really, really sad I didn't buy one. I will say that my wife does not like them.
Why does she not like it?
She doesn't like the way it looks. My favorite story about the i3 is the... I had one in for review. We're walking down the street towards the car... this one we lived in the city, and I'm like, oh, we'll take the review car. She's like, we're not driving that blue thing, are we? I'm like, yeah. She's like, fine.
I'll walk.
I love it. She's like, I'm good. I'll walk. Honey, it's 20 miles. It's okay. I'll walk. I'll see you there in a bit.
I like the i3 a lot. I like those little cars, even though I'm a big guy. I like little cars. I don't need, like, most
it's of a, it's actually
around.
Surprisingly roomy because it's tall.
Yeah.
It's got the little door in the back, the little, like, side. Oh, it's no.
You can fit the dogs in there.
You could just open a little door. Both dogs could jump in back. It's fine.
All right. That's it for this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.